Louise McSharry on 2FM.
Now, though, it is time for us to talk to Ellen Coyne. She is news correspondent at Independent News, and she joins me now via the medium of technology.
Hello, Louise, Ellen. How are you?
I'm sorry, I was putting the wrong theater up. My producer is having a heart attack. Caroline nearly died there, but it was my fault. I was putting up the phone line instead of this high-tech tile line. How are you?
Not too bad. I was actually seeking solace in my phone as well from that trick, because if you put in a search, it will kind of find it for you. So I put in the word cheese and was actually getting pictures of back when I used to be able to have wine and cheese boards in the normal pre-COVID times, and it's been a huge comfort to me.
Yeah, I bet. So we have got loads to talk about, so we might as well get stuck in. And obviously we need to talk about COVID first. And I suppose the good news is that the numbers are going the right direction.
The numbers are going in the right direction. So yesterday it was reported that there were 3,498 more cases. And the thing that they're really focusing on now is close contacts. So Ronan Glynn has asked everyone to please try and keep their contacts to a minimum this weekend. At the end of December, people were reporting an average of 6 close contacts, and that's now fallen to, I think, around 2.3. So all of that is going in the right direction. We are clinging to the hope that the measures that were brought in the week after Christmas will start to show an effect over the next couple of weeks. And if people are taking a glance at the newspapers today, they'll see a lot of report about what's happening now with the vaccines. There was kind of a scary story that came out yesterday about Pfizer, which is obviously the main vaccine that we're using at the moment, is unfortunately going to have to temporarily reduce the number of vaccines it can deliver next week. But that's only because it's ramping up supply, so that we'll have way more in February. And the health authorities are reassuring people that this will only have a moderate impact on the attempts to roll out the vaccine in Ireland. So far, we've got 77,000 people vaccinated, and Stephen Donnelly was saying during the week that at current projections and with all the new vaccines that are due to come on stream, we should hopefully have 4 million people vaccinated by September, which would obviously be huge and would potentially be able to bring us back to level one, which is something that we haven't been next or near being able to achieve for a long, long time now.
Yeah, oh, September. I can't help it. There's part of me that's like, September. Oh, I was really hoping for a summer. But sure, look, we don't know. We don't know how it's going to go. And I suppose we have to just take it one day at a time. So tell me about this. There are still concerns, obviously, about the number of people in hospitals, right? Aren't there?
Yeah, there are. And, you know, the figures for, I think one of the strangest things I was actually saying to my partner last night about COVID at the moment is we're getting really staggering figures for deaths and hospitalizations. Like, there was 50 deaths announced yesterday, and if that had happened a few months ago, that would be something that would actually stop the country in its tracks. And it's very unusual to be used to kind of this level of severity. Of those 50 people, all of them were people who passed away this month from COVID-19. So there still is a major high risk to it. But, you know, the government is just trying to really, really focus on the vaccine news. Obviously, we're still sticking with our current plan to stagger it and start with people on the front line. But people will be reading in the newspapers today that some healthcare workers, the vaccine focus is kind of being taken away from them for a few days because they want to ramp it up in nursing homes. Obviously, we all know what happened in the first wave in nursing homes. It was really, really devastating. So they're going to try to get elderly, vulnerable people vaccinated and then kind of spread it out among people working in the front line, and then it'll be staggered among the rest of the population. But at the moment, the supply is increasing all the time because every week a new vaccine gets closer to being approved across Europe, and that is a positive thing.
Yeah, well, I suppose just to say, obviously, I find every day when I hear the numbers and I hear the number of people who've died, it's hard, you know, you have to take a moment to think about the fact that there's a family associated with every single one of those deaths, and a person who lived a life and had friends and, you know, interests. And, you know, I think it's easy to kind of detach from that because we obviously have to protect ourselves and actually get through this time. But just to take a moment to say, you know, if you're one of those people who lost someone this week, just sending you so much love. And I can imagine that everything must seem extra difficult, and that all of the news about COVID must feel extra personal. So, you know, really, we should all take that as momentum to stay home, protect ourselves, protect our loved ones, and just get through this, which is hopefully the last really bad patch that we'll have. Fingers crossed. Okay, now let's talk about this thing that happened this week with working from home.
Yeah, so the government has kind of been talking about this for a while, but one of the few good things to come from the pandemic is a lot of businesses that had previously claimed working from home wasn't possible for them or wouldn't work were kind of forced to prove that it very much can work.
Yeah.
And jobs that we thought were kind of crucial to have people in the office have been working absolutely fine from home since March. So the government rolled out this plan during the week, and it basically said that it's going to pass a law to give everyone the right to ask to be able to work from home. So you don't get an automatic right to work from home, but you certainly get the right to kind of put it to your employer. And it's part of a plan. The government actually wants about 20% of the public sector to be able to work from home. This has a huge knock-on effect on things like high rents in Dublin. If there's a lower demand of people who need to be in the city centre, it's obviously massive for people with caring responsibilities, which tends to be women, and people with disabilities who otherwise would not have been afforded equal opportunities in the workforce. So the government is saying that, you know, since COVID, employers should be much more open to this. They should let employees work from home, maybe for a couple of days a week, if that's what they want. But they should also roll it out with a sort of, they call it the right to log off. I think one of the things that a lot of us have struggled with is that we've basically ended up living in our workplace since March. And sometimes it can be difficult to draw a clear line between when you finish work and when your normal life begins. So if people are working from home, the government is saying that employers should give people the right to log off, the right to switch off, and not be expecting people to be replying to emails and calls at all hours when their office is basically amalgamated with their home.
Yeah, I've seen some pretty good TikToks along those lines of people being like, this is me at home, this is me at work, this is me at my desk, this is me where I eat my lunch, and it's just all the one place. It is pretty tough, but it would be great if we could bring some flexibility and a bit more work-life balance into our post-COVID lives, no doubt about that. Now, very quickly, let's talk about the fact that there was always some kind of worry, I think, and anxiety around the fact that people who received wage support as a result of COVID kind of weren't really sure where they would stand with taxes, but it seems like that's been clarified this week a little bit.
Yeah, so when they brought in the temporary wage subsidy scheme and the pandemic unemployment payment, they did it really quickly because they were emergency measures. But one of the things that they did, rightly or wrongly, is they didn't tax them at source. And some people listening might have had a frustrating time getting onto the revenue website yesterday. That's because it crashed for some people, because over 400,000 people were issued bills which explained that they had underpaid on tax. About 70% of people who had the temporary wage subsidy scheme and 33% of those who had the PUP, the pandemic unemployment payment, had underpaid tax. The total figure is 458 million, but revenue has assured people that this isn't due immediately. You know, this isn't a tax bill that you have to pay now. The option is there to pay it off kind of fully or partially, but if you want to wait, revenue will be able to collect it through reduced tax credits starting from January 2022. But the advice is that anyone who's uncertain about what they do or don't have to pay should be able to check My Revenue. But just in the last 24 hours, there's been huge demand, so the website was a little bit creaky. So maybe give it a day or two or a few hours and it should be fixed again.
That's kind of a scary figure. Like, that's a lot of money.
It is, and it's difficult because so many people, it's hard to estimate, because some people maybe went on to PUP and then came off, or maybe went on it and then unexpectedly kind of were on it again in the second half of the year. So it really is like on an individual basis, you should be able to work it out. But there actually should be some people on the pandemic unemployment payment who may be owed a refund as well. So it's very specific to each person. But they are stressing, you know, obviously this is a very stressful year for people, particularly someone who would have required that payment.
Yeah.
There is no obligation to pay it straight away, and it should all be explained in your kind of personal My Revenue account on the revenue website.
And as Paul always says, when Paul from askpaul.ie is in, he always says that the people in revenue are really helpful and they're not your enemy, and if you need help or support in trying to figure this stuff out, they, you know, don't hesitate to get onto them. Okay, now let's talk about this situation with people in gangs basically using children to commit crimes. I gather they're going to be getting heavier sentences.
Yeah, that's right. So this is something that the guards have been saying a long time, that kind of people involved in drug or gang crime have been recruiting children, basically to first of all protect themselves from prosecution and getting children to carry out crimes. The government has known that this is a problem for ages. There was research from University of Limerick in 2017 that said that people as young as 11 were being used for crimes related to drugs and alcohol. And basically, they're going to introduce a new law, which will mean that if you compel a child to commit a crime, you will be guilty of a crime yourself. So it'll be an offence for an adult to compel or coerce or induce or invite a child to engage in criminal activity. You could be jailed for up to 12 months on a summary conviction, and that could be increased to 5 years if you're indicted. And what's very important about this legislation is that the child would not face any prosecution. And it wouldn't even be a case that a child would have had to commit the crime. It would just be if it was proven that someone was trying to compel or induce them to. And this is something that the Gards have been struggling for with ages. One of the key issues is that once these children kind of become enlisted, they're actually then used to enlist other children. And something that's been very potent is kind of the notion of status in certain areas where children get involved in this. And it basically just breeds kind of new generations of crime, and it's very hard to extract those children from those situations when that happens. So this is something the government's been aware of for ages, the Guards have been warning about for ages, and they announced this week that they're going to introduce a specific law to try to tackle it, and fingers crossed that works.
Well, there's no doubt about that. That's fantastic news. It's completely unacceptable. Like, oftentimes the children who end up in these situations are the most vulnerable children anyway. And then you've got people, you know, we know that children who are kind of introduced into the criminal justice system from an early age are very unlikely to get out of it. So I'm really happy to hear that, Ellen. Okay, quickly before I let you go, let's go to America. Land of the free and the home of the brave.
Yes, indeed. So a lot happening next week. Joe Biden is going to be inaugurated on Wednesday. We have to give a quick congratulations to Donald Trump, who's become the first American president in history to be impeached twice. The House of Representatives voted by 232 votes to 197 to impeach him on Wednesday. Obviously, this is because he's been accused of inciting mob violence in the Capitol. It's going to be really interesting this week, because what happens now is it goes to the Senate, which is the upper house in Congress. They'll hold a trial to determine if he's guilty. This could have an effect on blocking him from ever running for office again, which is something that he said already he wants to do in 2024. You need a two-thirds majority to convict him. So that means that you'd need at least 17 Republicans to vote with the Democrats in the Senate, which is evenly split with 100 seats. And the New York Times was saying that as many as 20 Republicans are open to convicting the president. And the reason that this matters, not just for Donald Trump, is because the Democrats really, really want to pressure Republicans to come out and clearly state if they were or were not in favor of the horrific violence and attack on democracy that we saw earlier this month. So it should be very, very interesting. Obviously, it's going to take place after he's left office. There's a chance it could actually take place on the same day that Joe Biden is inaugurated. So that would be quite the cinematic end to a very interesting 4 years in Washington.
Well, I think I'm going to be watching CNN again, it sounds like. Can't wait to go back and see my old friends, Jim and Anderson and Wolf. It's going to be a joyous time. Okay, well, thank you so much, Ellen, for that summation of the news. Now, Ellen, we're not going to talk to you for a while.
That's right. I'm going to be away for a little while, but I will definitely be back as soon as possible. And I will be tuning in absolutely every single week.
Well, we will miss you. We are very lucky. We have even more coming in your place, which is fantastic. But we will, of course, miss you. Best of luck over the next number of weeks. And we will talk to you on the other side. That's Ellen Coyne, news correspondent at Independent News. Thank you so much.
Thanks to you. Thanks. Bye.
I thought she was going to cry there. I'm a bit disappointed she didn't, to be honest. No, I'm only joking.
Louise McSherry on 2FM.